Chapter 22. I screamed in order to summon up my primal reserves and to intimidate Madrigal into missing me, and definitely not because I was terrified. While I unleashed my sonic initiative, I also crouched down to take cover. To the untrained eye, it probably looked like I was just cowering and pulling my duster up to cover my head, but it was actually part of a cunning master plan designed to let me survive the next 3 or 4 seconds. Madrigal Wraith was Thomas's cousin and built along the same lines, slim, dark-haired, pale, and handsome, though not on Thomas's scale. Unfortunately, he was just as deceptively strong and swift as Thomas was, and if he could shoot half as well, there was no way he would miss me. Not at that range. And he didn't. The spell work I'd laid over my duster had stood me in good stead on more than one occasion. It had stopped claws and talons and fangs, and saved me from being torn apart by broken glass. It had reduced the impact of various and sundry blunt objects, and generally preserved my life in the face of a great deal of potentially grievous bodily harm. But I hadn't designed the coat to stand up to this. There is an enormous amount of difference between the weapons and ammunition employed by your average Chicago thug and military-grade weaponry. Military rounds, fully jacketed in metal, would not smash and deform as easily as bullets of simple lead. They were heavier rounds, moving a lot faster than you get with civilian small arms, and they kept their weight focused behind an armor-piercing tip, all of which meant that while military rounds didn't tend to fracture on impact and inflict horribly complicated damage on the human body, they did tend to smash their way through just about anything that got in their way. Personal body armor, advanced as it is of very limited use against well-directed military-grade fire, particularly when exposed from 10 feet away. The shots hit me not in a string of separate impacts, the way I had thought it would be, but in one awful roar of noise and pressure and pain. Everything spun around. I was flung over the fracturing ice, my body rolling. The sun found a hole in the smoke and glared down into my eyes. I felt a horrible, nauseated wave of sensation flood over me, and the glare of light in my eyes became hellish agony. I felt suddenly weak and exhausted, and even though I knew there was something I should have been doing, I couldn't remember what it was. If only the damn light wouldn't keep burning my eyes like that.
Wouldn't be so bad out here, I growled to Ramirez.
I held up a hand to shield my eyes from the blazing New Mexico sun.
Every morning it's like someone's sticking needles in my eyes.
Ramirez, dressed in surplus military BDU pants, a loose white cotton shirt, a khaki bush hat folded up on one side, wraparound sunglasses, and his usual cocky grin, shook his head.
For God's sake, Harry, why didn't you bring sunglasses?
I don't like glasses, I said. Things on my eyes, they bug me.
Do they bug you as much as going blind?
Ramirez asked. I lowered my hand as my eyes finished adjusting, and squinting hard made it possible to bear the glare.
Shut up, Carlos.
Who's a grumpy wizard in the morning? Carlos asked, in that tone of voice one usually reserves for favorite dogs.
Get a couple of more years on you, and that many beers that late at night will leave you with a headache too, punk.
I growled a couple of curses under my breath, then shook my head and composed myself as ought to be expected of a master wizard. Which is to say, I subtracted the complaining and was left with only the grumpy scowl.
Who's up?
Ramirez took a small notebook from his pocket and flipped it open.
The terrible twosome, he replied. The Trailman twins.
You're kidding. They're 12 years old.
16, Ramirez contradicted me.
12, 16, I said. They're babies.
Ramirez's smile faded.
They don't have time to be babies, man. They've got a gift for evocation, and we need them.
16, I muttered. Hell's bells. All right, let's get some breakfast first.
Ramirez and I marched to breakfast. The site Captain Lucio had chosen for teaching trainee wardens evocation had once been a boomtown, built up around a vein of copper that trickled out after a year or so of mining. It was pretty high up in the mountains, and though we were less than 100 miles northwest of Albuquerque, we might as well have been camped out on the surface of the moon. The only indications of humanity for 10 or 12 miles in any direction were ourselves and the tumble-down remains of the town and the mine upslope from it. Ramirez and I had lobbied to christen the place Camp Kaboom, given that it was a boomtown and we were teaching magic that generally involved plenty of booms of its own, but Lucio had overridden us. One of the kids had heard us, though, and by the end of the second day there, Camp Kaboom had been named, despite the disapproval of the establishment.